Chapter 12. Jesse had driven past the Salter House before, but hadn't spent a lot of time in that part of Paradise. With the Atlantic, the lighthouse, Paradise Neck, and Stiles Island spreading out below, the view was breathtaking, and it was easy to understand why the wealthy had once made the bluffs their own. It was also easy for people to forget that attitudes toward the sea had changed over the last 150 years. Once upon a time, men understood their insignificance in relationship to the ocean. They respected its might and its bounty. They weren't so cocky as to think of the ocean as something the Lord had put there as a means for their leisure. In the past, the wealthy built their houses by the sea not so they might play in it, but that they might revere it. His first reaction, after getting the call from Molly about the murder, was to fly back. But Jesse realized that between the New York traffic, the potential delays at LaGuardia, and traffic on the other end, he might as well drive. And it would save him the trouble of having to get his car back to Paradise from New York. Once he got out of New York City, past New Rochelle and into Connecticut, the drive hadn't been too bad, and there were the memories of his time with Dee to keep him company. He'd left a note for her at the desk. It wasn't poetry. Hard to write poetry when you know someone's just killed a girl in your town. Hard for Jesse to write poetry, period. The note explained the essentials, and he hoped Dee could understand why he'd left without saying goodbye. If she couldn't, he wasn't sure he'd want to see her again anyway. Jesse was okay until his Dee fantasies had run their course. By then, the aspirins were losing ground to his headache. The headache wasn't the only thing making a comeback. With the pain came Julio Blanco's voice. Jesse wished he had pressed Molly for some details, any details, or had stopped to call back for an update. At least then he could begin thinking the basics of the case through instead of hearing Blanco's indictment of Vic Prado over and over again in his head. Blanco's voice was bad enough, but now Jesse kept rerunning the play in his head, trying to view it from the catcher's perspective. He scoured his own memory for any hints he might have suppressed, for any sense that Vic had held onto the ball too long before throwing the ball. It was no good. Jesse had and would only ever have the memory of the play he had carried with him since the night of the game. Except now he carried it with doubt. One of the things, maybe the only thing, that had let Jesse move on with his life after his shoulder was torn apart, was the belief that what had happened was fate. It wasn't preordained or anything, but things played out as they'd had to. Because the ball was hit as slowly as it was, because of where it was hit, because of the speed of the runner, because Vic had better range to his left than to his right, because Vic had to throw from his knees across his body, because Vic was such an instinctive fielder, because the runner was trying to impress the scouts, because the infield was so hard, because... Now there was a different because, one that had nothing to do with bad luck or unfortunate, immutable events. This new because was tainted with all the worst aspects of human weakness. Jesse pulled over at the next-to-last rest stop in Connecticut. He let out some of that gallon of water he'd had earlier, bought a liter bottle to put back in, swallowed another fistful of aspirins. Once he felt the aspirins taking effect, he called Molly. Any details? God, Jesse, Molly said. She was 18. Jesse Stone let Molly have a minute. She was a good cop, a tough cop. Unlike some of the other cops on the Paradise PD, she would have done okay for herself on the LA PD or any other big city PD. Guys like Suit Simpson, as good and loyal as he was, were better off in Paradise. Jesse understood that his demeanor at crime scenes sometimes led his cops to believe he thought that one corpse was like the next, that one murder victim was like any other. He supposed that it was okay for them to believe that. He also supposed it was true, if not completely. Every murder victim deserved justice, needed an advocate. Just as every living citizen was entitled to equal protection under the law, so too were the murdered entitled. Yet some victims were more equal than others. Maybe that wasn't fair or right, but it was human, and cops were owed that much leeway. Name? Jesse said. California driver's license says Martina M. Penworth. She was a student at Tufts. Same school as Ben Salta, one of the sons. How? Where? Handyman came to check out the house after the storm. Found the Salta boy's car out front and the front door unlocked. He discovered the body in a small second-floor bedroom. Two bullets in her, probably 9mm. One in the heart, one in the head. Close range, but the entry wounds weren't contact wounds. There was another round put into the wall above the headboard. There was evidence of sexual activity. Rape? Hard to tell, but I don't think so. Just a used condom. ME will be able to tell you more. TOD? Last night around 10. The Salter kid? No sign of him, Molly said. Any ideas? I guess the kid could have done it, panicked and took off. But it doesn't explain the car, and it doesn't explain the damage to the bedroom door. Door seems like it was kicked in. The girl's parents been notified? There was silence from the other end of the phone, which Jesse understood perfectly. I'll do it, he said. It's my job. How about the Salters? The father, Harlan IV, is on his way from the vineyard. No doubt he'll have a Boston lawyer in tow. Jesse agreed. No doubt. Healy? Should be here any minute. Okay, Molly, I shouldn't be too much longer. I want to drive by the scene first, then I'll come into the office. I want to talk to the handyman. Ethan Farley. What about him? He's worked for the family forever, and his family has worked for the Salters going back generations. He's not our man, Molly said. Anything else comes up, call me. Jesse got back into his car, his headache ebbing away. Before pulling out of the parking spot, he bent his right arm at the elbow and touched his hand to his shoulder. It didn't hurt, not in a conventional way. It was more of a phantom pain, one that spoke of what could have been. Right now, finding Martina Penworth's killer was more important than all the could-have-beens and should-have-beens in Jesse Stone's life.